1-1 pitch, swing and a drive. Deep to right field, way up there, way out of here. Goodbye, baseball.
Eight strikeouts for the King tonight and make it 23 consecutive scoreless innings for Felix.
Strike three called on the outside corner, and there it is.
It's time for the Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast.
Kyle Seager, that just happened. Thank you very much.
Now, here's your host, Gary Hill.
Well, thanks for being here once again. Welcome back to the Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast. And we're getting closer and closer. Tomorrow, the last day of January. And then February's here, and you can say, yeah, this is a month where it all starts. Pitchers and catchers, spring training, we're getting oh so close. So we have a big podcast for you. Colin O'Keefe is going to be here. We haven't visited with him this offseason. One of our favorites, so that comes up. We're going to look at not only the Mariners, but the rest of the division and where the Mariners fit in the division. So that's coming up. Also, a great conversation with Taijuan Walker. He was on the Hot Stove Show, Rick Riz, Dave Valley, Shannon Dreher. And also, they talked to Chris Gwynn. That was an outstanding conversation as well about some of the youngsters. Chris Gwynn, of course, part of the Mariners front office. Director of Player Development. That's a great conversation, too, coming up. So, big podcast, but I think we'll start with the return of Colin O'Keefe. Well, here we are with one of our favorites. It's been a while. It's great to catch up with Colin O'Keefe. Colin from lookoutlanding.com, it's great to talk to you once again. I can't wait to dive into everything, but I know one thing you've done in the last few weeks, you've launched a podcast of your own, too. So, before we get going, you got to tell us what you've been working on.
Well, it's funny. I've long wanted to start a podcast. If somebody asked me what's the best Mariners podcast to listen to, I of course have to defer because I don't have all the good stuff and I'm not able to do it on a day-to-day basis. But, yeah, started up a podcast in the last few weeks with my brother Connor. It's called, 22s and Tridents. And, yeah, we just have a couple of 22s of craft beer and just kick around the Mariners from a fan perspective. And It's been a fun thing so far, Gary. I can understand why you do a bit of a labor of love to stay up late and get the audio to sound just right. But other than that, it's been a lot of fun to just, you know, talk Mariners. That's why I love coming on this show. Is just I'll talk Mariners with just about anyone. So it's kind of something my brother and I decided to do together, and we've had a lot of fun with it so far.
Yeah, I recommend checking it out. Yeah, I love talking Mariners too, obviously. Where can people find it to check it out?
I usually distribute it through my Twitter feed, but if you go to iTunes and just search 22s and Tridents, all spelled out, even if you just search Tridents on iTunes, you should be able to find it. And then, yeah, if you follow me on Twitter, at Colin O'Keefe, I will always post it on there. There's a link in my Twitter bio for where you can click on it and subscribe on iTunes. So that's probably the best way. If you follow me on Twitter, at Colin O'Keefe, there's a link right in the byline to the iTunes.
Yeah, great follow, too. I recommend doing that as well. So great stuff, and man, it has been such a busy offseason. And we'll dive into Mariners and what they've done in a moment. But I am fascinated by this division and what has happened in the offseason to this division. So let's start team by team. And just a quick thumbnail of your thoughts on what every team has done this offseason. And we'll start with the toughest one because I don't know if anyone knows the answer to this. But what about the Oakland A's and their offseason?
It's so puzzling because it started off so mysteriously with that Billy Butler signing for $30 million. And that kind of framed the whole thing going forward. And it honestly kind of set the tone. Like, why are you signing Billy Butler as your first move for $30 million guaranteed right off the bat? Because there were some people thinking, is he going to get a one-year deal, a two-year deal? It was like, oh, well, maybe the Athletics see something and they want to get something done. And then it was so puzzling to see them just, you know, ship guys out, and they were shipping guys out. People weren't really overwhelmed with the returns that they were getting either. I mean, they got some decent players in the Donaldson trade. Some people are, you know, very high, of course, on Brett Laurie, but you know, it's nice that they picked up Zobrist there at the end. But you really wonder if they're going to be able to contend. It's one of those things where you have to try to decide, you know, do I trust Bean enough to do this? But you know, and it's a roster that's not as good as the roster they finished out the year with last year. And the roster that they finished out the year with last year was not very good down the stretch. I mean, the overall talent was there, was quality, but you really wonder what they're doing. I mean, as you know, at worst, you know, the Mariners are now neck and neck with the Athletics. And, you know, that's an at worst, you know, seems like the Mariners kind of pulled in front. And it's one of those things where you just go, maybe Billy knows better than everyone else. But, you know, on the other side of things, you do have to wonder what's going on. I don't want to go on too long about the Athletics, but on the Zobrist trade, what's interesting is Zobrist is a guy that you can trade so easily. So yeah. People saw the Zobrist trade and they go, oh, the Athletics are definitely all in now. But on the other side of things, if you're a team like the Athletics where you might everything might click and you might be good, or everything might not click at all and you might be really bad, Zobrist is a guy who is relatively cheap and bordering on free, because once the trade deadline comes, they can move him again for quality pieces because he can play in so many different positions. Yeah, but no, it's point. Still puzzling.
No doubt. Yeah, I think Donaldson's going to be a huge loss too. So the Angels, they've had an interesting offseason in that they haven't done a whole lot other than trade, who I think has been an underrated part to their squad the last few years. I think he had a really nice year last year, but getting some age on the pitching staff. Trout is obviously Trout, but boy, I am interested to see what the Angels are going to look like this year.
I always watch MLB Network late at night, kind of just kick around the rumors and what's going on, who's going to sign Shields, of course. And they always pull up this one graphic that is very heartening as a Mariners fan. They pull it up and they show the teams who have spent literally $0 on major league free agents this offseason. And the Angels are one of them. They haven't spent a single cent on major league free agents so far this offseason. And I think they've taken a step back when they go from Kendrick to Rutledge. Yeah. And then, of course, you know, they got some depth in Andrew Haney. I mean, he's a guy that could potentially, you know, do some damage against the Mariners in the years to come. And he does provide some depth in 2015. But when you look at the overall talent level of the squad, they're taking a step back. And not only because they're not adding, but, you know, Trout's going to be Trout, like you mentioned, but you have Pujols a year older. You have Hamilton a year older. You have Garrett Richards. You know, he's progressing, you know, as far as I've been able to tell, has been progressing. His health has been progressing very quickly. But you do wonder, once he gets on a mound, once he starts moving, how comfortable he's going to feel, you know, on his base, because that was a serious injury. But, you know, you wonder about the Angels if they're going to get involved in Shields, but they ask, you know, they ask the general manager all the time, are you going to get involved with one of these big name pitchers? And over again, he says, no, I mean, we like the squad that we have. So, you know, I said once before, it looks like everyone's done. And then the A's traded for Zobrist. But I will say about the Angels, it kind of looks like they're about done.
And speaking about done, the Rangers haven't done a whole lot either. And, you know, they had a lost year last year with all their injuries. It almost looks like from the outside looking in that they're trying to figure out exactly what they have. And when you look at their team, their roster, they could go a lot of different ways.
Yeah, and I mean, that's what's really interesting. I mean, I'm almost kind of – because I'm looking at the season and looking at the division and thinking, you know, the most likely outcome is that the Mariners are going to compete for a division title against the Angels. That feels like the most likely outcome. And then you think, what would be the most surprising or most, of course, kind of outcome? And it would be, you know, the Rangers just – getting all their stars to click right, getting a Jerks and Profar healthy and him contributing, or a Rondo Dor, him really contributing at a high level. But you wonder if it's all there. I mean, the projections, when you look around, the eyeball test, when people are asked about it, it doesn't seem like they're really on the level even of the Athletics. But, you know, their biggest move so far this offseason seems to be picking up Giovanni Gallardo from the Brewers. And, you know, that could be a strong move for them because they did need some quality pitching, especially in the middle of their rotation where, you know, they don't know what they have from some of the guys. But, you know, Giovanni Gallardo was at one point, you know, a really high quality pitcher when you go back to maybe 2011 and 2010. But, you know, in more recent years, he, you know, he's more of a back end guy. And not only is he a back end guy, but he's a middling back end guy who's going from the National League to the American League. And, you know, when guys who aren't great in the National League go to the American League, sometimes they can struggle to hang on, especially, you know, at least to the level where they were at. And, you know, Gallardo doesn't have a lot of ground beneath them before he loses his value. But, yeah, I mean, you look at the Rangers, you know, they're really guys like Shinshu Chu to bounce back, and they're really depending on Prince Fielder to get back. But, you know, especially with Fielder, those are the types of players people always wondered how he was going to age. And neck injuries are serious things. I mean, he's supposedly, you know, based on what I've heard, you know, listening to various reports and other podcasts as well, he sounds like he's going to, you know, come back. He's ready and raring to go. But, you know, they're a team that if they can even contend, they need everything to go right. You know, other teams like the Angels and the Mariners just need to get what they expect. The Rangers really need to have everything kind of click and go right, and they need to get healthy. And you wonder if even then it's going to be enough.
And finally, the most active team in the division, the Houston Astros, who I think have had a nice offseason, but obviously a long ways to go, but some young talent there. I think they're going to be an interesting team to watch this year. I don't think they'll be in contention for the division, but they could be pesky this year. I'll put it that way.
What's most interesting to me when I follow teams like the Astros and the Cubs is that they seem like they have like a similar arc to the Mariners almost a little bit in terms of like what they decide to acquire and when they decide to acquire it. The Cubs, like, for example, really, you know, jumped the shark. They said, we're cutting right to our Cano. We're going to get our Lester this offseason. We're going to go. It really feels a little bit like the Astros are where the Mariners were in 2013. You know, I think things went really sideways for the 2013 Mariners. But when you look at the players they picked up, you know, Gattis is obviously younger, could be better, but he's a, you know, a power hitting right-handed guy. And if they just kind of decided, you know, we're just going to hit some long balls. So it feels almost like when the Mariners picked up Morrison Morales and they said, let's, you know, at least knock the ball around a little bit and be pesky, like you mentioned. But yeah, they've had what's been a pretty decent offseason for them. They've moved some players, and getting Gattis was pretty good. But based on what I've heard, they did give up some good young talent to get Gattis. And it's going to be interesting to see exactly what they do with him. I mean, are they going to try to stick him behind the plate? Most think that they're not going to do that. Are they going to put him out in the left? I mean, he's going to try to knock the train off the tracks, but I think they're going to be pesky. The Mariners have always had their hands full with the Astros, and it's going to be even more the case now. So, I mean, I don't know that they're going to contend, but I mean, I've seen some people putting the Astros, you know, out of the cellar and in front of either the Athletics or the Rangers. I mean, it wouldn't be the most shocking thing in the world to see them, you know, get up around 81, 82 wins and you know, beat out, you know, a team that struggles and kind of bottoms out.
Yeah, I think they have a shot not to finish last in division, and that's a step forward considering where they've been the past couple of years, no doubt about it.
We've been there.
Yeah, no doubt. Okay, so we've gone through every team. So in context, where do the Mariners fit in with this division right now in your view?
I mean, when you look at it, it's just there's really no reason why they can't contend for a title. I mean, when you look at you know, of course, a division title. And once you're contending for division titles, you're playing for World Series. You know, I, of course, have the prefer to be kind of the delusional optimist. But, you know, when you look at a number of different projections, it has the Mariners as being at the very top tier of the American League, if not the best team in the American League. As you know, some projections are that bullish on the Mariners. But when you look at the moves that they made, you know, it was a good offseason. I don't think it was like the sexiest offseason, but they took care of business. You know, they needed a right-handed number four hitter. Some people kind of dreaded Nelson Cruz, but he fits in there so nicely. You know, that money today on this team, it works fine. The Mariners payroll is obviously, its trajectory is going up, and he fits in well there. If he can not, you know, drop off too far from his performance last year, I think it's too much to ask for him to do what he did last year. But, you know, the Mariners, the thing is they project, they're supposed to be very good. They're supposed to be like a, you know, top tier of the American League with kind of the status quo. Like, you know, James Paxton, he's okay, but he's not great. We don't know if he's going to pitch a full season. And Taiwan Walker, you don't know exactly what you're going to get from him. That's kind of what the projections say. And they still have the Mariners right there at the top tier of the American League when you look around, and it's kind of just expecting everyone to kind of be the norm. But if the Mariners have a couple things go right, you know, if James Paxton pitches to the level that everyone thinks he's going to, if Taiwan Walker, you know, takes a step forward, or even Ronis Elias, he's going to be competing for that number five spot. That's one of the most interesting things. You look at the offseason that they had when, you know, people were upset with the Saunders trade. That was kind of, you know, one of those things that was just going to happen for good or bad. But that nicely with the platoon, they did so in a cheap, cheap way, just trading relievers. And, got Nelson Cruz. They got some pitching depth. Their bullpen looks just fine. And when you talk about the holes on this roster, it's it's almost encouraging because of the types of holes. That's like, what's the biggest hole? Oh, maybe first base. Yeah, well, Logan Morrison just tore the cover off the ball last year, and, you know, has the potential to really slug. Or, ooh, backup catcher. That's something we might have to worry about. It's, you know, when you look at the things that we worried about, you know, last year and the year before and the year before that versus the things that we worry about now, you really get a sense for how just how well-rounded and how quality a ball club this is and is going to be.
No, you make a great point. I mean, here we are, spring training starting just a few weeks, and you can map out a starting lineup against righties, against lefties. You can project what the bullpen's going to look like. You can see the rotation already. It's been a long time since the Mariners have been this solid in every spot going into spring training.
That's what's most interesting is when you look at the spots that are up for grabs, it's like if you were to be really, really generous, there are three spots up for grabs.
Yeah.
And it's the fifth spot in the rotation. It's the last arm in the – it's probably the second lefty in the bullpen. Mm-hmm. I guess you could have two bullpen arms that are kind of up for grabs, the second lefty and the last righty, and then the shortstop position and the utility spot on the bench. It's just there's not – you look around, and the things that they're battling for, it's like, well, they probably got a backup catcher. You know, who's going to get that last bench spot? Is it going to be – you know, are they going to go with Bloomquist or Taylor or Miller? You know, which two of that three is going to make the team? You know, Bloomquist, of course, has to get healthy. And then the number five spot, it's just the things that they're battling out for. It's really encouraging because, yeah, you can make out the lineup top to bottom. Both, you got all your starters figured out there pretty good. And you're just really figuring out the very last spots on the bench. And it's just, it's crazy to go into spring training and say, we got everything just about set. And where we don't have things set, we have some great, great competition between Tyler Walker and Ronis Elias. You know, you can't think of a more fun number five starter competition. And then, you know, the shortstop position. Last year they had Brad Miller and Nick Franklin. You know, I think this competition between Chris Taylor and Brad Miller is even going to be a step up from that. And then, you know, you look at second lefty in the bullpen, they got a number of guys to vie for that spot. If they stay healthy, the biggest thing at this point, their biggest challenge between now and opening day is just staying healthy. Have everyone stay healthy through spring, you know, where spots are open, compete. But other than that, this is a well-rounded, filled-out ball club, and you know it's pretty nice when you go into spring training and you got your lineup card all filled out, ready to go for opening day.
No doubt about that. And given that situation, I think the spotlight is going to be big time on shortstop because you know that's where a lot of the focus is going to be with so few holes. And I am fascinated by what shortstop could look like with Taylor and Miller. How do you think this is going to play out in the spring and going into opening day?
I think it really all depends on, honestly, you know, we look at Taylor and we look at Miller. I think one of the biggest things that position battle all really comes down to is the health of Willie Bloomquist. Willie Bloomquist had microfracture surgery, which is a very serious surgery. We saw last year how that kind of really disrupted Corey Hart. And the reason that I say that is they need a utility guy that can play shortstop. Lloyd likes Miller's bat, but even in the late innings, he's going to want a defensive replacement in Chris Taylor. And I don't know that Bloomquist is going to be able to play short late in the game. Maybe Miller's, you know, taking the steps forward defensively, but I think in an ideal situation, if you were going to, you know, ignore who is owed a roster spot, you know, potentially with Bloomquist, if you're trying to construct the roster exactly how you want it, I think you want both Miller and Taylor on the roster because, you know, there's just such a nice yin and a yang. One's righty, one's lefty, one's offense, one's defense. They really play off each other really well. I think Lloyd's hesitant to say, you know, the word platoon. He hasn't said it about Seth Smith and Justin Ruggiano, and he's, you know, definitely not going to say it about two young kids competing for a spot. And I wonder, you know, if they would go the platoon route there, but you can see why it has its advantages because Taylor is, you know, really good with the glove. Miller's so good with the bat. I think Miller has a shot to be the full-time guy. And I guess I would say both have a shot to be the full-time, all-the-time guy. But, you know, if it were me choosing, if I were saying, you know, what sets this ball club up best to succeed, I would try to carry both of them and platoon them when you can because they're going to get their reps. They're going to get their reps where they need it. You know, Miller's going to get shots at the plate because righties are going to pitch more. And then Taylor's going to come in against lefties. They pitch a little bit less, but he's also going to come in late innings, you know, to shore up the shortstop position. I guess there are egos at play, but it's an interesting battle to watch. But I will say it isn't a sure thing that somebody has to lose.
No, that's a great point, too. And I think almost quietly at the end of last season, you peel back the numbers the last month, and boy, Miller and Taylor combined to put up really good numbers out of the shortstop position offensively, which, you know, I mean, that could easily happen again going into the season.
That's what's so interesting is, you know, it really profiles to be similar to next year. And people, you know, they look at, you know, where are the holes on this roster where the Mariners could potentially upgrade? Because, you know, there's another piece of the puzzle there at the shortstop position is the Mariners have a really good young kid in Ketel Marte down in AAA. So, you know, you think, you know, are you going to send Taylor down back to Tacoma to play at, you know, shortstop every day? Because that position is currently occupied. They got an everyday shortstop down in Tacoma. They have a kid, you know, who's young that they want to hone. They want to have him, you know, facing, you know, live pitching at AAA. They want to play in shortstop. So it's interesting because they could end up in a situation very similar to last year where they get towards, you know, the middle of the season and they figure out where their needs are. And they kind of very same as last year. They have kind of a bullet in the chamber when it comes to having a bit of depth at the shortstop position.
Yeah, that's a great point. You mentioned projections a while ago. When you're looking at your projections, you look at this roster. Who do you look at that you think is going to take a next step this year?
When I look as the guy, I mean, it's kind of the favorite. It's almost the cliche pick is James Paxton. I mean, if he can, if this transformation that he made halfway through 2013 down in Tacoma, he kind of refined the way he was. His windup, not necessarily going over the top, but supposedly watched some tape on Kershaw. And since then, he's kind of been a different animal. He's been able to pitch later in games. He's been able to get ground balls. He's been able to be efficient because before he was kind of an Eric Bedard five and dive guy, and people were wondering if he was going to end up being, you know, a reliever. And then he goes through this, you know, pseudo transformation. You know, the people, you know, you look around at the projections and they have him pitching like 114 innings and being about it worth like a win and a half. He could be, this is something that my brother and I discussed in the podcast, and he let this out there, so I almost wanted to save it for later, is, you know, who's going to have a better season, Hisashi Iwakuma or James Paxton? Mm. And it could really be James Paxton. He could take a major step forward because he's a really, really, really strong player. But then, of course, you have your Miller and your Zunino, and it's just when you say – there are just, I will say, you know, there are a lot of things that could go wrong with this baseball club. Just there are a lot of things that could go wrong with any club.
Yeah.
But when you look at the upward volatility of this roster, because they have so many young players who are waiting to take that leap forward, there, it's just, they could really, if they had one or two players step forward in a Zunino or a Paxton or a Walker or an Elias or a Miller or a Taylor or an Ackley, I think Paxton is the most likely to do so if he can stay healthy. And that's really the only thing holding him back. But I would pick Paxton if I were to pick anyone, but that is slight the other guys because they, you know, they have a lot of talent that could potentially take that next step. And if it does, it's going to make a big difference in the win total for the end of the year.
Boy, and that answer should have Mariner fans salivating about what this rotation could look like. And of course you have the king at the top and you have Iwakuma who continues to be solid. And if Paxton were to be the guy that we think he can be, that is one heck of a rotation, because I think Jay Happ is going to fit in nicely. I think the park really works for him. And then you're talking about a five, either Elias or Walker. I mean, that's a really impressive rotation.
Yeah. People say, oh, you know, let's expect the Mariners to do a little bit worse this year because they can't be as good as they were last year. The rotation just can't be as good as it was last year. And maybe that's true when you look at the numbers, but then, you know, look at the rotation. This is a more talented pitching rotation than they had last year. You know, that's just the way it is. They still got the same, you know, two frontline starters in Iwakuma and Felix. You know, Iwakuma has to kind of, you know, rear back and I guess fight the twilight a little bit. But they have an outstandingly talented rotation, and there's no reason why it can't be better than last, as good as last year, because it has definitely, definitely more talent. And like you mentioned, I think Jay Happ's going to really pitch up in this park. You know, he's a guy that has some decent stuff and he has good outings and he's strung together some good outings and supposedly had an uptick in velocity the second half of last year. But, you know, top to bottom, that is a quality rotation. If they can stay healthy, they're good. But then again, if they don't stay healthy, they got a number six in Elias or Walker, who they know has a lot of talent.
Which is huge, and it's funny because we talk about the rotation last year, and at the beginning of the season, things did not go according to plan. You had Iwakuma missing a month, and Walker wasn't there, and Paxton wasn't there, and yet they still managed to, and part of that, a big part of that was Elias and Young, but still they managed to have a very productive rotation throughout the season. But think about if it goes according to plan, they'll really be in business.
Yeah, and it's just, that's what's, if everything goes right as far as the rotation goes, there's no reason why they can't have, you know, one of the best rotations in baseball. It's, of course, you know, hard to say the best because, you know, what they got out there in Washington, but
well, yeah.
this is front line. You know, Walker was projected when he was coming up to be a one or a number two. Paxton was projected to be a one or a number two. And I will say, what I you try not to hope, you don't want to hope for it, you just try to block it out of your mind. Danny Holson is lurking down there. But, you know, the guys at the Mariners, they say he was feeling good at the end of 2014. You know, they're not going to put any pressure on him. They're not going to say that he's going to even pitch in the majors this year. They're just going to, you know, let him bide his time at Tacoma and see how he looks. But I'm interested to see. I mean, when you ask around, you know, Bob Dutton at the News Tribune, are we going to see Danny Holson in Seattle in 2015? And he said flat out, yeah, at some point we're going to see him. And it wouldn't surprise me at all. So, I mean, I don't know if he's going to still be that number two, number three type starter that we hoped he would be. But, you know, he could be another crafty lefty out of the back end of that rotation and some decent depth if he can stay healthy and get back a little bit. You know, he had an injury very similar to Michael Pineda, and people noticed that much, but towards the second half of last year when he came back, Michael Pineda was very good. Mm-hmm. And Danny Holson, you know, you don't want to hope because you don't want to be let down, you don't want to put any pressure on him. I'm still very, very curious to see how his 2015 goes and if we see him in Seattle at some point.
No doubt. Colin, this was fantastic. It was great to get back with you again, and I know we'll talk soon as we get closer and closer to pitchers and catchers.
Absolutely. Not too far off now. Thanks for having me on again.
Chris Gwynn is our guest. Chris, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great. Doing.
Everybody's fine. We're getting ready for spring training here in a few weeks, Chris, and it was great to see you at FanFest. How excited were you to see the excitement of the young players who made it out to FanFest, like Patrick Kivlahan and Alex Jackson, John Hicks, and DJ Peterson, to see their eyes light up and see Safeco Field?
I'm always excited to see them kind of get closer to their dream. And, you know, they've been working hard and putting some pretty good performances together. They've done now the last couple of years, and they can really sniff it now. And so they're willing to listen to anything we have to say now. So I think we have their attention, but we all have to be proud of what they've been able to accomplish for sure.
Chris, coming into this year, you know, we focus on the big league team and what's going to happen and how that's all going to break down at the end of spring training. When you're looking at an entire minor league system, how much do you know where guys are going to be right now, and how much of that does kind of depend on what happens during the spring? Where are you right now with putting it all together?
I'm in the middle of kind of trying to see, you know, what could happen, and because I really don't know you know, what Jack and Mac might want to do. So there's always contingency plans, but it just depends on how low you go down in the minor leagues. The lower you go down, I have an idea where those guys will be, but, you know, they still have to show up to spring training healthy and, you know, ready to play. So it's kind of one of those jobs that the situation is always fluid and you have to be ready to react and go one way or another, depending on the information you receive.
Chris, it's Dave Valley. Long time no talk. Great to hear your voice. Hey, so this past weekend, I finally met Alex Jackson. Now, I was hoping all summer when I was up in Everett that I was going to meet him a little bit earlier. Now I had a chance to visit with him and talk with him, and I have to tell you, just really impressed talking with him as a young man. Uh-huh. And his demeanor and just the way he kind of carries himself, certainly just from being around him, it just really feels like he's going to be a special player. But can you tell me, give me a quick update? You know, I know last year he had the issue, the ball hit him in the face when he was diving for
yeah.
it. How's he doing, and where do you see him coming into this year?
Oh, great. He received an award at the winter meetings. It was Baseball America's High School Player of the Year. I actually got a chance to talk to him, and He's doing great. He's ready to go. And you would have saw him if he didn't get hit in the
I needed him. I really needed him last year.
You would have seen him. And you know, he had to sit out about a month and a half almost. So, yeah, it's pretty close to a month. And he's got power to the center part, to center field, so he doesn't have to generate. So he's a real interesting kid. He was a catcher in high school, was moved into right field. He's done pretty well, still has some stuff to learn, but the back could be really good. So I think you're right on. He's the presence that he has. It's like he's an older kid. He's 18, but he seems like he's about 20, 21.
Chris, we won't go through about 140 kids in the minor leagues now, but there are some names we will throw out there for you, like Alex Jackson. But one guy I want you to talk about, and we'll have a few more as well, is Patrick Kivlahan. Tell us a little bit about Patrick. Yeah, I think he was a third baseman in the minor leagues. Kyle Seager has that place, that position sewed up for a long time. But tell us a little bit about the rise of Patrick Kivlahan and about his story, because he was a heck of a football player in college at Rutgers and then decided to play baseball.
Yeah, it's an interesting story. He played football for, I think, 3 years, maybe even four. I think 3 years, then decided he was going to play baseball. And when he decided he was going to play baseball at Rutgers, he ended up being the most valuable player of the conference. So it kind of tells you what type of athlete he is. When I first saw him, the raw, you know, he still had a lot of stuff to learn. He was playing third base, which he's not bad over there. It's just I don't know if that's going to be it, especially with Kyle Seager having signed, you know, the contract he signed. So we'll move him around. First, a year and a half ago, he struggled in the fall league, which he says was the biggest turning point for him, because it kind of lit a fire and he kind of saw what he needed to do. Mm-hmm. And he came back this year. He was a different guy. He was aggressive. He was hammering balls out over the plate. He was not giving an inch on off-speed pitches. He was going the other way. He's a leader. He's just a great kid. It's a great story. I'm not sure. I'm pretty sure he'll probably start off in Triple A, if, you know, he doesn't make the team, which I'm sure, you know, there you can see, you know, the team is pretty much already set, I would say. But he has some stuff still to learn. Triple A baseball, you know, you find guys that are maybe sometimes the odd man out and know how to pitch, and he needs to go through that. But watching him develop, it's been really exciting. All our coaches and coordinators just love him because he goes about it the right way.
Chris, one guy I want to talk to you about is Danny Holtzen. What's the latest on Danny? Had the surgery on that shoulder, highly touted prospect, number one pick a few years ago. And what can we expect out of Danny this season?
Well, I don't know. I don't know what we can expect. The only thing I can tell you is he had a great rehab last year. He was down in Arizona, made a lot of progress. He changed his delivery a little bit, where he's not as across his body as much. He kind of lined up, and he worked really hard.
Hey, one of the important things in developing players is, you know, some of the players you're developing for use on your big league teams, other of the players you're developing to be able to trade and to be able to bring other things back to the organization that will help. And, you know, if you look at what the Mariners have done in the last couple of years, you know, I see Carter Capps for Logan Morrison. I see Brazos for Ruggiano, Smith for Maurer. What's going on with these relief arms that you are developing down in the minor leagues right now that are bringing back major league players?
You know, I think a lot of the credit goes to the scouts. Tom McNamara and his crew doing what they do. We just, you know, our philosophy is that, you know, everybody's a prospect until they prove they're not. I don't really care what round they're drafted in, and so we work with them. We try to figure out where they could help the organization best, and we try to create value in all of them. So And that's what we, you know, we've kind of been able to do with the last few. But, you know, there's a draft every year, and it never stops. And, you know, guys that, you know, do the yeoman's work, the stuff that you don't see, the guys that throw on both hands, they're always talking to guys, trying to learn, you know, how to understand how to get guys out, learning pitch sequences. It just never stops. So I'm happy that Jack was able to do what he needed to do to make the big league team stronger. But my job never stops. So we'll keep doing what we got to do. And some of them will make it to the big leagues in Seattle, and some of them will be in the big league somewhere else.
Along the lines of the bullpen, I mean, we knew about Leon and Smith before they made it up. We knew about Maurer. Are there other guys? Who are some names to keep an eye on as far as relievers go?
I don't know. Michael Guaipe is a kid that was pitching in Double-A last year. He went the whole month of April without an ERA. He's a pretty good. He's a strike thrower, good slider, fastball is like 91, 94. He was a starter in the minor leagues early, and then we moved him to the bullpen. He's kind of taken off. Tyler Olson is another name that's, you know, he was just drafted a couple drafts ago, and he's already getting invited to big league camp, so that's great. He's a left-hand pitcher, has a really good changeup to spot his fastball, you know, has an idea how to get guys out. So we have some more coming. It's just getting them to the point where they're confident in their abilities and getting them to the point where they can throw all their pitches for strikes.
Taiwan, how you doing, buddy? It was great to have you out there at FanFest. Did you have a good time?
Yeah, I had a great time. A real good time, Rick. You know, FanFest is one of my favorite things. I've done it 3 years already. And, you know, it's just a lot of fun being able to interact with all the fans and all the little kids and stuff.
This is Dave Valley, man. I love the shoes. You got to tell the folks about those shoes that you were sporting at FanFest.
Yeah. Well, you know, a lot of people that were there follow me on Twitter and Instagram and stuff. And I know I'm a big sneakerhead, so I thought I'd wear a couple of my favorite pairs of shoes out to FanFest. And they're pretty bright. You know, they're out there, but, you know,
pretty bright.
I just thought I'd have a little fun with it.
You can land airplanes out at SeaTac with those things. They were so red. But you came in, you came out into the dugout dialogue with the music of Fresh Prince. You kind of look like Will Smith a little bit, too.
I appreciate that. Yeah. I think that's a huge compliment.
It is, man. But it was nice to have you there.
Hey, Taiwan, are you down in Arizona right now?
Yes, I am. Yep, I'm over here close to the complex.
Have you seen a Seahawk fan or two?
They're all over the place. You can't get away from them.
It would appear, because you are very active on Twitter and Instagram and whatnot, and I know that you had an allegiance to another football team, but in the recent weeks, you're pretty fired up about what you're seeing with the Hawks right now.
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know, I'm a huge Saints fan, but you know, living in Seattle, it's kind of hard not to root for the Seahawks, especially when you get the fans on you all the time about, you know, converting over to the Seahawks. But I will tell you, you know, after last game, you know, it's really hard not to root for the Seahawks. You know, just seeing their fight, you know, they didn't, you know, they were down 2 touchdowns. Everyone gave up. Fans started leaving early, but they found a way. They came back, you know, just the passion and fire and Russell Wilson, you know, to lead his team to a victory. You know, he really reminds me a lot of, like Felix. You know, they have that same drive. You know, every time they step out into the field, they just go out there and get the job done.
T, going back to last year, it didn't get off to the start that you were hoping for. You had a setback in spring training. I know for personally, when I've gone through times and stints on the DL, there's a lot of time, a lot of time to think about who you are and how you're going to come back. Tell me some of the things that you learned about yourself last year as you came back, and as Rick mentioned, some of the numbers that you were able to put up once the season ended.
Yeah. It was tough because I've never been hurt like that before. You know, I never missed that much playing time. But I think the biggest thing I learned was to be patient and not to come back until I'm 100% ready. You know, I talked with Holton a lot because he kind of went through it and everything. So, you know, we talked a lot, and he just kept telling me, you know, don't do anything until you're 100% ready. You know, listen to your body. So I think the biggest thing was, you know, just listening to my body and just waiting and just, you know, trusting their plan and just going with the whole program, you know. But it was definitely tough not to
not to try to get up there, especially with the team doing so well and winning, you know, and having so much fun. It was tough not to try to get back out there sooner.
But then, Taiwan, even after you missed so much time in the first half of the season and part of the second half, you really finished out on a positive note, especially during a time when the Mariners were fighting for a playoff spot, where every pitch meant something, every game meant something. And then you put together a start like you did in Toronto. It was a 1-0 loss, but you pitched great, 8 innings. I think you gave up only about 4 hits in that game. There's a walk and I think a double, and that was the only run they got. Burley was outstanding. But what was it like to end up on that kind of a note? What did you tell yourself, and what did that prove to yourself, that final start against the Blue Jays in Toronto?
You know, those games were important, and, you know, we dropped us, I think, the first two, which was tough. So, you know, we definitely needed that third one. So, you know, I tried not to put too much pressure on myself, but in that moment I felt like, you know, the team really needed me to step up. So, you know, I just really went out there and gave it all I had, and just, you know, tried to make sure I kept my team in the game to give them a chance to win.
What did you kind of learn about yourself in that? You knew the situation the team was in, and we saw you out on the hill, and it just didn't look like you even blinked. You were so focused in that game. How were you able to put that out of your mind that, you know, now I've just got to go out and pitch?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely tough, you know, especially with that walk. You know, I think that walk really hurt. But, you know, for next year, or this year actually, you know, that start means a lot. You know, it just shows that I have it in me that can go out there. And, you know, if I believe in myself and, you know, trust myself and, you know, trust the teammates, you know, my team behind me and the defense and stuff, you know, I can just go out there and, you know, just pitch my game.
You had a changeup that was kind of working for you that day too. That was a little bit of a surprise to people. How much of a part of your game is that going to be this year?
Oh, huge. My changeup is like one of my best pitches right now. You know, I've had a couple bullpens and been thrown in. It's feeling really good right now. So, you know, definitely my changeup is it's going to be a huge thing for me this year. And hopefully, you know, I can get my cutter slider back and my curveball.
Yeah, that start was so impressive. I think you threw about 98 pitches in eight innings in that game. Your previous start against the Astros, you won 10-5, but you went like 5 1/3 and threw about 95 pitches, but you got the win in that game. What did you and Rick Waits talk about between starts? Because you definitely went right after the hitters against Toronto.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the biggest thing, just going right after hitters and attacking them, you know, not trying to be too cute on the corners, you know, going right after them, making them put the ball in play, just so I can go longer in the games like that. You know, I'm not trying to strike everyone now, because when you do that, you know, you fall behind and your pitch count goes up. So I think the biggest thing was he told me just go out there, just attack the hitters with my fastball, you know, and when you have the opportunity to strike someone out, I guess, you know, go out and do it. But for the most part, just kind of pitch to contact and just go out there and get early outs.
Taiwan, as a former catcher, just hearing you talk about your changeup is exciting to me, because knowing and understanding the importance of having a third pitch as a starter, I think, is so important. You pitch with a guy who probably has the best changeup since Pedro Martinez and Felix Hernandez. Did Felix help you at all trying to master that pitch?
You know, it's kind of hard because the way his changeup is different. You know, it's really unique. He throws a circle change, but he throws it so hard. You know, it's just, and it moves so much. It's just crazy. But Terry Clark was the one who showed me that pitch, and you know, right when I started throwing it, just felt real comfortable, and you know, I was able to repeat it and throw it consistently. So, you know, I just really, really worked on that, threw it every single day, and just really hammered it.
I'm sure glad Jack put together this ball club by adding a Nelson Cruz, by also keeping you and James Paxton. There was a lot of interest in the young, talented pitchers on this ball club. What's it like for you, Taiwan, to see yourself and James Paxton? You know, Danny Hulson is going to get better and come, you know, up from the minor leagues at some point. What's it like for you to be that young pitcher who's already here now and doing what you're doing?
That's fun. You know, it's a lot of fun, especially after last season, how close you were. And, you know, like you said, adding that big piece with Nelson Cruz, you know, I think our team's going to be really good, and we're going to do really great this year. So I feel like it's going to be a great fun season, you know, and hopefully getting to pitch alongside Paxton and, you know, Elias and Holtz. You know, I've been pitching with the guys since 2011, you know, throughout all of my leagues. So it's going to be a fun season for us.
Hey, Taiwan, what do you think of the new uniforms?
I like them. I like them a lot. They're different, throwback. You know, I like all the uniforms we had, so.
You gonna wear the red shoes?
No, not for those.
Taiwan, I did
those throwback uniforms that that Griffey wore that one day. I think it was turned back to clock day with the red and black. I might wear the shoes then, but
all right,
yeah, I think that was like turn ahead forward the clock or something like that.
Yeah, turn back
to the future.
Yeah. those are a little different.
Now, yeah. Taiwan, I saw it. Was it your Twitter account yesterday? That I saw some shoes. Were those cleats that you had? Because they had a little bit of the teal and everything working.
Which ones?
They were high tops.
So many.
High tops. I know. I have a lot. I think they were shoes. They were basketball shoes. Yeah.
Okay. Because, you know, if you threw some spikes, if you threw some cleats on the bottom of those, I think those would work, man.
I know. I might. I've been thinking about it. Trust me. I have a bunch of shoes that I just want to throw spikes on and just go out there and wear them.
You got another tattoo?
Nope, man. It's been a while since I got a new one. I feel like I need to slow down. You know, 22 and I almost have no room left, so I feel like I just...
You're running out of canvas?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know what you mean. I'm slowing down myself.
Yeah, right? It's tough.
Exactly. I tell you what, it is so much fun watching you, young man, come through the system to pitch in the big leagues like you did last year. I am so excited about spring training this year. You're going to be a huge reason why the Mariners are going to have even more success this year. And thanks a lot for answering the phone this morning. I needed to ask you the other day, but I'm glad you were there, and we appreciate you being on the show.
Of course. You know, anytime. I love being on the show with you guys. It's always a great time.
Taiwan, thanks a lot, buddy. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, guys. Take care. I'll see you guys soon.